This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
Mason Payne here live from the MVP Studios in Chicago, and thank you for tuning in. There's been a lot of AAA video games like Spider-Man, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, Assassin's Creed Odyssey, and they've all been released in the past few months. Geek culture expert and writer at Machinima, Ray Carcello, is going to join me to review these titles and break down if they lived up to the hype. Thanks for joining me, Ray.
Happy to be back, Mason.
I got to talk about Call of Duty with you, the new Black Ops 4. Now, I know that there have been some complaints a little bit about when you get an objective and you die, they actually respawn you near the enemy team. Have you experienced this?
Been kind of something that I've seen a lot of where I'll spawn and I'll get shot in the back because the enemy will be like right there. And I'm like, I just haven't even had time to get my bearings yet. There's also a thing where a lot of times you can camp the enemy spawn and just wait for them to pop up and then keep picking them off. That happened to me a couple of times too in a control match where it was basically, it's finally in the third life I figured out where the guy was when I popped back up and I was able to take him out, but it was, they can camp there and it's really bad for competitive play because it to do that, you're basically, the other team has a distinct advantage. So yeah, so I've experienced that a couple of times in different ways where the spawning system for Call of Duty Black Ops 4 seems to just be off. And I don't know how they fix that. If they do some kind of a buffer there where, you know, you're invisible for a couple of seconds or something to where you don't have to worry about somebody sniping you as soon as you respawn. Or, yeah, they just simply figure out that when, you know, like a lot of other games, the spawns will switch or will swap depending on what the position is of the enemy player. So you're not constantly being ambushed right after you come back to life.
Yeah, you're right about that. A lot of other games, I've seen multiple spawn areas. So you could spawn here, you can spawn in location B, C, or D, and it's always sometimes on the opposite side of where the enemy team is located. Why would they do this? Is this a bug then?
Yeah, I'm not sure what exactly the issue is. I mean, I know there is one of the specialists has it where you can spawn on them or spawn on a point where they set up a device, but it does seem to be some sort of, it doesn't seem like it was completely thought through or that hopefully it's something that will be fixed in future patches. It's definitely, you know, I played it a lot this weekend and it is an issue that I came up with a lot. So I don't want to say it's technically a bug, but I definitely do want to say the system isn't working probably as properly as it should be.
Now, I play on a PS4, and I was reading comments about how people who play on Xbox One, they get a weird stuttering throughout the gameplay. Do you know about that at all?
Yeah, actually, I've been hearing about this on a couple of different systems where there have been frame rate issues. I've also been hearing on PC where people are moving almost so fast that the hitbox detection isn't properly picking up where the bullets are going, and that it's almost impossible on PC to get a headshot. You have to constantly be aiming for center mass. I haven't experienced this as much on PS4, but yes, I have heard that they've been having some frame rate issues in terms of both PC and in terms of Xbox users, and in terms of trying to get that smoothed out. So it really feels, I mean, I hate to say this, but it feels, for a Call of Duty game, really unpolished. In that regard, from a technical standpoint, and I'm wondering if, again, this is something that won't get fixed as it comes back down the line. Hopefully, in the next few weeks.
Yeah, you know, I play everything on PS4 unless, you know, it's something special, and then I put it on Xbox. But I was reading that PC, they don't get split screen. Why is that? I thought everybody gets split screen.
Well, I think it's just because typically most PC players aren't set up for a split screen, whereas typically you're playing console on your TV. I think when you're playing on PC, you're playing close up to your monitor. Again, I do understand that you could run it from your PC to a TV and play with your friends that way, and I guess hook up some controllers. But I think it's just because they understand that most of their PC base isn't going to do all that and isn't going to have that setup, that I don't think that they felt it was an option that was necessary. So I understand it. I agree. You should never leave options out of any build when you're putting it on multiple systems like that. But I also, at the same time, do understand that I think most PC players aren't playing it with locally with friends, so that you need a split-screen mode.
All right, so we talked about all the bad. We gotta get some good here. Have you tried any of the specialist characters out?
Yeah, so I've tried all 10 of the specialists. I did the specialist mode that did kind of like a glorified tutorial. I was pleasantly surprised that at least there is a little bit of a story there, but it gives you a chance to really kind of get a feel for all of the specialists, what they do, where they come from, what scenarios and what gameplay modes they play in the best. I personally really enjoy playing as Ajax with the he has the riot shield basically, and then he can kind of hunker down and it kind of covers him from almost 180 degree angle in front of him when you can activate it. He also has a great flashbang grenade. I know I've frustrated many a foe over this weekend with his when I charged up. There's three levels of charge on his flashbang. So I use that a lot, and I kind of can clear a room pretty quickly if you have it with a full charge, because everybody's kind of stunned and just kind of spinning in circles trying to figure out where you're coming from.
Do you think they'll ever add additional specialist characters, like as a DLC or not?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, DLC, it's an easy way to add more characters to the game, and I think it's an easy way to add more abilities. I don't know, though, in terms of balancing, if how soon we'll get one. I don't think we'll see another specialist for a while, but especially if Black Ops 4 is going to be the true platform for Call of Duty going forward, where they're going to just kind of keep building on top of this and really trying to get, you know, have this be a much longer life than most typical Call of Duties, which is part of the reason why they focus so much on multiplayer and zombies this go around. I think that I wouldn't be surprised if they almost kind of go the Rainbow Six Siege route, where they kind of wait a couple years, they kind of try and feed this as much as they can, and especially considering you have so much potential. I mean, the most popular Call of Duty in recent years is Black Ops 3. You know, a lot of folks left World War II after that came out. A lot of folks left Infinite Warfare after that came out. Went back to Black Ops 3. The Black Ops brand right now is the bread and butter for Call of Duty. So I wouldn't be surprised if they kind of tried to stick with that and tried to keep supporting that for a bit longer than your typical annual cycle.
All right. So Battle Royale, what do you think of it? Is it good or nah?
I think it's PUBG done right. It's polished. It's smooth. It looks great. You know, there's a little bit of a Fortnite flair with some abilities and sort of how the maps are laid out. But I think that I think that with the Call of Duty coming out, Battlefield coming in November, Red Dead coming at the end of the month, I think PUBG, unfortunately for those guys, are going to probably kind of suffer for this because they're going to get pushed out of the market because they're just not nearly as polished as what those other games are looking like and what Call of Duty definitely is. For me, if I had to choose between the two, I'm playing Call of Duty Blackout mode because it is just a better experience. It's a smoother experience. If you've been playing Call of Duty for years like I have, you're more familiar with the weaponry. So I think that I personally feel that Blackout is the better Battle Royale mode compared to PUBG. Now, that said, I don't think it's going to be a Fortnite killer, but because of those, again, the building aspect of Fortnite makes it so unique, but I definitely think that PUBG is going to suffer for this.
All right, so I know you said there was a little bit of story when you were doing the specialist tutorial. Do you miss the campaign, or were they right to take it out?
Oh, no, I completely missed the campaign. I think the campaign is one of the most underrated aspects of Call of Duty, especially in the Black Ops storyline. I think that while 3 might have jumped the shark a little bit, I think what 4 did in terms of hinting at, Mason and Woods and their children and time going on and whatnot, I think that there was a missed opportunity here to really give a really deep, really great experience in terms of the story. I appreciate, again, at least they did give us some cutscenes, they gave us something, but I am definitely a person who misses the campaign, the 4 to 6 hour campaign, who misses the story, who misses the big bombastic moments, and feels that the game suffers as a whole because of not having that campaign there.
You know, I'm bad at any first person shooter. I'm not going to lie. I'm not very good at them. But when it comes to the campaign, I always felt kind of OP. So when it comes to, like, I miss the campaigns because it's a little bit of the story, but it's also because I get to actually play. Because when I'm playing, I usually get sniped real easy. So it's more of me yelling at the TV than anything. So I do miss the campaign personally. I hope the next time they make a game, it's going to have a campaign mode in it.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what exactly they do, because it, you know, if this sells well, and if this sells better than World War II did, and it sells better than Infinite Warfare, they might continue down this route, which is a shame. But I'm with you. I hope they bring the campaign back.
All right, so here's one with story. Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Have you played this one yet?
Yep, I haven't beaten it, but I am several hours into it at this point. A lot of games came out in a very short period of time, so I'm trying with time management. But Assassin's Creed Odyssey is, you know, I don't want to say it's the best Assassin's Creed, but it's definitely, it's taking the series in a new direction, and it's got a lot of elements that I'm really enjoying, but I'm kind of curious to see how much farther it goes as I get farther into it, because it's you know, similar, you know, picking up kind of where Origins left off. You're the girl, I think Layla, you know, in the real world, she's working, trying to bring the assassins back, trying to stop Abstergo, and she finds basically the broken spear of Leonidas and finds the DNA of Leonidas' children on it. You get to choose which one of those children to play as, and then from there, you have to kind of, it's the Pelopian War, which is a classic Greek conflict from, you know, obviously thousands of years, literally thousands of years ago. And it kind of is going to tell a new story that's kind of actually more fantasy oriented. It leans very heavily into the Greek mythology so far from what I've seen, and really kind of, you really get a sense of the period, I think, more than you've gotten from even something like Origin, that really even that very much, obviously, very heavily leaned into Egyptian mythology. And I think so, this is going to be, for me, I'm loving the story so far for Odyssey, and I can't wait to finish it.
Storyline wise, where is this in the timeline?
So this is even before Origins. This is 430 BCE. So this is even far. This is the farthest back we've ever gone with an Assassin's Creed game. So this, even though Origins was originally the first, now this is the first. There technically isn't an Assassin's Brotherhood. There isn't an, there isn't even Assassin's yet. It's all mercenary based. I'm sure those might end up becoming the Assassins at some point. Like I said, I'm several hours into the game. I haven't beaten it yet, but it's shaping up to be where you can kind of start to lay the foundation for a lot of storylines in terms of the first civilization, in terms of the Templars, and in terms of what end up becoming a lot of the key factors and the key staples of Assassin's Creed that we end up getting in later in other games later on the timeline.
Okay, now I always get confused with Assassin's Creed because it jumps everywhere. And is there aliens in this or no? Was that something that, like, a misconception that I held on to since Assassin's Creed 2 or 3?
I don't, they're not aliens. I don't think there's aliens. it's the first civilization, right? That there's a culture, that there is a people that came before humanity. Humanity was kind of like slaves, and they looked to this first civilization, these peoples, as gods. And then there was a massive solar flare, and these gods were wiped. Their technology was left behind. They were wiped out, and humanity was able to thrive. So I don't think they're aliens per se, but there was a first civilization. There was a people who came before people who are now since dead, and now Abstergo Industries, the Templars, and the Assassin Brotherhood are fighting to try and control that power so that people can either have freedom of choice, like the Assassins believe, or they can be controlled as by the people who are above them, which is what the Templars believe.
Okay, and the reason why I bring that up is because couldn't we go even further back? Like, this is Inception. We're going even further into the Assassin's Creed lore and folding into itself, right? So could we go into the very, very first civilization beyond this, or they can't go that far into other, I guess, aliens that aren't human? I don't know. It's just, it gets kind of weird.
I mean, in theory, you could, as long as you had their DNA, you could keep going farther and farther back. Like, that's the idea of the story. But I think that also what really drives Assassin's Creed and what's always driven this franchise is what makes an interesting setting, what makes an interesting time period. And I think that for a lot of times they haven't really repeated themselves in any shape or form. They've always gone somewhere new. They've always gone somewhere different. I think that's why it's so interesting for them to really start to go back to these older civilizations and find a way to, you know, it was difficult, but they found a way to make it work in the story. And it was important because these were time periods and places that people wanted to explore, places that people were interested in, you know, ancient Egypt, ancient Greece. Where they go next, I don't know. But I'm sure that whatever they decide, I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun and it's going to be a huge, expansive world.
Now, we may not know where they're going to go with this series, but it was announced that there will be no Assassin's Creed game for 2019. Do you think this is smart?
Yes, I think it's very smart. I think for two reasons. I think, A, the new generation of consoles are coming. We already know PS5 is confirmed. We know that Xbox is working on their next thing. We're probably looking at a 2020 release. Chances are, and I know this also for a fact, that most development companies already have the hardware to work for the next generation of consoles. I would not be surprised at all if Ubisoft is working on a launch game for the next generation of consoles, or at least to start getting it ready, potentially, and is working on that hardware. So that's the first thing. I think the second thing is also, they saw with taking a break after Syndicate that it really helped them pay off. It really gave them time to hone their skills and, again, perfect their and master the hardware. And also, it allowed them to build bigger worlds, a deeper storyline. I think the idea is that they can take the series yet again to another step and raise the bar, and it can pay off huge dividends if they just take their time. They don't rush it. You know, as great as Odyssey is, you can see very much the foundation that it built on top of for Origins. You know, very much like Assassin's Creed 2 did with the original Assassin's Creed. I think that them doing two games every 3 years, I think two games every 4 years, I think that's the way to go, and I think they've realized it, and that in terms of being lucrative, it's a lot more lucrative for them. They sell a lot more units when it's not an every year thing, because as we're learning from Call of Duty, gamers do get franchise fatigue when you have an annual series. So I think that this is a smart move for two reasons, like I said. So I think that this is the way to go, and I'm excited for 2020.
You know, you're right that this month there was a lot of games that came out, and one that I was really looking forward to was Spider-Man. Did you play this one at all?
Yes, I platinumed it. I got 100% on Spider-Man.
Whoa, so look at you.
Yes. I found all the backpacks. I found all the pictures. I even caught those stupid pigeons.
Oh.
But yes, no, I 100% did Spider-Man. I thought it was fantastic. I don't want to spoil it, but I want to say that I want to commend Insomniac for doing with Spider-Man what so many people with the past 10 years of writing Marvel comics have been scared to do. And I think that I think the story was absolutely tremendous. I think they're how they reimagined the Sinister Six. I think how they reimagined Dr. Octopus. I think how they completely reimagined the Spider-Man story, including Miles Morales, but still staying true to what makes Spider-Man at his core one of the best superheroes, I think was a great idea. I think it's, again, honestly, if Red Dead wasn't coming out, Spider-Man would probably be front runner for Game of the Year for me. It's between that and Assassin's Creed Odyssey, although I haven't beaten that yet, but right now Assassin's Creed Odyssey is definitely up there. Yeah, if it wasn't for Red Dead coming out, Spider-Man could be a Game of the Year, it would easily be a Game of the Year contender. As it is, though, it's probably the best Spider-Man game we've ever gotten. The swing mechanics are fantastic, the story is great, nothing ever feels repetitive or like a drag or a grind. I mean, the suits are amazing. I can't wait for the DLC. They did a really amazing job. I mean, I keep saying amazing, no pun intended, with Spider-Man. But it really is the best Spider-Man game we've probably ever gotten, and it's a must-play, I think, and for anybody who's a fan of the character.
Now, when it comes to Spider-Man has, like, a ton of villains, but who's the main big bad in this game?
So it's a little spoilery, but you can kind of, for fans of the character, you can kind of tell that Dr. Octopus is really the big bad for this game. He's really, I mean, even though Green Goblin is technically Peter Parker's true nemesis, like Batman with the Joker. In this game, it's Dr. Octopus. And the reason why Dr. Octopus is such a compelling villain is even more than the Green Goblin in some ways. I think Peter's relationship with Dr. Octopus is so personal, and I think that they really focused in on that here, and I think that's really one of the things that makes this game so beautiful and so touching and so terrific from a storytelling standpoint, is they really leaned into the relationship between Peter Parker and Dr. Octopus as a mentor before he turns into a villain. I think that's really one of the best things. So in this game, the main villain is Dr. Octopus.
All right, so when it comes to the suits, because I know you got 100% on this game, which one do you think was the best?
It's really hard to pick. First off, I love what they did to explain why he has a white spider now instead of a black. I really enjoyed the classic comic book Spider-Man. The classic comic book Spider-Man, the cel-shaded costume, I think, is the best one in the game for me personally. But I love the Ghost Rider Spider-Man costume. I love the Iron Man Spider-Man costume. I love the Black Widow Spider-Man costume that you unlock by doing all the Black Cat challenges. Like, I mean, there were so many great costumes that it was difficult to choose. But I personally still go with, the comic book cel-shaded classic Spider-Man costume.
See, for me, it's all about looks. I wouldn't even care about any of the abilities. Spider-Punk all the way. Now, when it comes to the suits, though, can you mix and match?
Suit that you have, you can mix and match powers, right? So each suit unlocks a power. So you can wear a certain suit but have a different power associated with it. So I actually kind of had the power that I had from the very beginning where you can spin around and just shoot webs everywhere and web everybody up immediately. But I was constantly changing my costume. Like, I constantly was unlocking different costumes and changing different looks and doing missions with different things. Sometimes the Spider-Man Mark II suit, a Mark III suit, Mark IV suit. But yes, you can mix and match. You can have different powers, ultimate powers, with different costumes.
All right, so I have to know, because I haven't finished the game myself. Is Venom in it at all?
No.
Wow.
Yeah, no, that was my biggest shock, is that with the Venom movie that came out.
Exactly.
With it being such a huge storyline, but I think they wanted to just focus on a classic Sinister Six Spider-Man. I think they wanted to focus on a core Spider-Man story, and that nothing gets more original with Spider-Man than the Sinister Six, I think. So I actually applaud them for being brave enough not to include Venom, not even the Venom suit. Like, it's not even unlockable. Like, the Venom suit is not even in the game at all. It might come via DLC. I don't think so, though. I think they're really trying to keep this as a more grounded, more level-headed Spider-Man game, which, I mean, already, I mean, you're talking like, I mean, obviously it's a guy with spider power, so, I mean, how grounded can it be? But, you know, I think they're trying to keep the deep space stuff. I think they're trying to keep the symbiote storyline where things can get very convoluted and very busy very quickly. I think they're trying to stay away from that as much as possible. I think they should be applauded for that. And again, I'm also very surprised that Venom is not even hinted at. I mean, you don't even get Eddie Brock in the game. So it's very interesting to see that's the route they went and that they were able to do that.
Yeah, honestly, I was too. I was very surprised. This is a Sony exclusive, so they could have, if they wanted to, put Venom in there. And most of the times you do see games come out in correlation with the superhero movies. So I was like, oh, Venom should be in Spider-Man. They're coming out around the same time. It's, you know, a cross promotion. And they didn't do it. And you're right. They should be applauded, because I never thought of it until you said it. The Sinister Six is the original kind of bad guy group against Spider-Man. And Sinister Six had books, like an actual book, and then the comic books, and then you saw it in the cartoon. So they're really important to Spider-Man, at least the adult Spider-Man, and how he defeats his foes. So you're right. I didn't think of that. That is pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you.
No, I never thought of that, because you're right. Sinister Six is really important to Spider-Man. And I was thinking of, I was being selfish, because I really like Venom and Carnage, and I like that whole era in Spider-Man history. But you can't forget about Sinister Six. That was the first group he really went up against. And it, you know, maybe later on they'll have another one, and when they come out with Venom, maybe they'll do Secret Wars. That'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting. Man, I love Venom. I love Carnage. I love Maximum Carnage. It's one of my favorite stories growing up. But I think what We know the first DLC is going to be Black Cat oriented. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the second and third DLCs. I know a lot of people are speculating that they might be like Hammerhead and like some other classic, like more like gangster villains. But we have to see. You know, it'll be interesting to see where they go. And and the third one, people were thinking Silver Sable. But it'll be interesting to see where they go with DLC, or if honestly they probably are saving it for a sequel, because if this first one is any indicator, people want more Spider-Man games from Insomniac, and I hope they deliver.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
Well, you can go to raycarcillo.com to check out my voiceover demo reels. You can also check out my Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all at Ray Carcillo. I'm also writing for DC Daily, which is the news show on DCUniverse.com, DC Universe service. You can find me around, but I'm definitely social media is probably the best way to find me. So just at Ray Carcillo, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's masonverapayne.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.